I know it's not turkey season yet, but look out, honey, because here come the colonel.
Well, that was rude. I mean, come on, really. Well, welcome back. The second half hour of The Promise of Tomorrow here on the Science News Radio Network. I'm your host. I'm Colonel Mason. We're going to get back with John Verico in just a minute. He's the Chief of Media Relations for the Department of Homeland Security, Science, and Technology. And he's telling us about the national conversations going on. They want to hear from you and me, telling the Department of Homeland Security what we can do to better make the country safe. And they're asking everybody, all the first responders and all. Of course, at the end of the program, list your comments and the voice of reason. And we're going to have an encore revisit from Francina Hallrus, this remarkable African-American woman who runs the only nuclear defense company that we're aware of. And she has got a lot of really neat things to say and how we personally can take care of ourselves. So, but right now, let's step over to our fountain of useless information we keep here on the set to answer today's query. Throw in the coins.
Welcome to the fountain of useless information. How can I help
you? Okay, we've thrown in the coins, and we have awakened the spirit of the fountain who knows all, hears all, sees all, and tells all for a price. All right, oh, spirit of the fountain. Here is today's query. This is going to be a really, 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 really tough one. You are not going to guess this one, oh spirit of the fountain. We're going to stump you this time. What is the world's most densely populated country? That ought to throw you. The most densely populated country in the world. Which one is it, O Spirit of the Fountain?
I have given you my answer, and now you may tell the other.
Aha! We cannot stump the Spirit of the Fountain, the world's most densely populated country. If you said India, you're wrong. The world's most populated country, surprisingly, is Monaco. Monaco. All right. Back to our program. All right, the sweet melody of the Science News Studio Band. All right, well, we're back on the line with John Verico, Chief of Media Relations. When we left him, we were talking about all the things that he's doing to talk to the first responders, and we've mentioned FEMA, but there's a bunch of others, too.
Well, we are working with all of the operational units on these things. FEMA is a big one, but also you have to understand you're operational. You're a border patrol agent out in the desert, and somebody's coming across. You need to make a decision on what to do about it, and you need to be able to also be able to quickly identify if this person is a person of interest, or just somebody who got lost, or is an intentional, you know, a bad guy. So there's all kinds of things that you need to be able to figure out, and you need to be able to access that data quickly.
Well, the surveillance camera people tell me that they can tell with their surveillance cameras if it's a smuggler of human traffic, or if it's a drug smuggler, or it's a terrorist, or farm workers coming across, and that they have that the kind of capability. So I presume that what that's going to do is be made more pervasive. Is that what you're saying?
It's more of being able to analyze the data that is provided by those types of sensing devices, and being able to make decisions based on that information.
Okay. All right. What is
the final piece is on resilient communities, and that's basically trying to find ways to make our society disaster-proof.
Okay. Now, how do you do that?
Everything, primarily looking at infrastructure, critical infrastructure, power systems, water supplies, anything that the designed and built infrastructure, strengthening buildings, having readily deployable countermeasures, all sorts of things in that, anything that would fall in a resilient community realm. So how to minimize damage from happening before an incident comes in. You know, things that you can do preventative-wise to prevent damage. how to mitigate the severity of the damage, and then also how to quickly recover from it so you get back in operation.
Well, there's a great deal of concern about the power grid as being vulnerable, and of course our bridges and things like that. My goodness, we had a bridge collapse in Minneapolis a few years ago that on I-35, I think it was. And so there's a lot of concern with the infrastructure. So that's we're glad to see that's a major part.
Yeah, and that's actually that's the visionary goal. What we wanted to do with that whole collaborative process to help us to identify what our visionary goals should be. We wanted to hear from everybody and their grandmother, because there are some great ideas out there, and we need to know what people think. What's important to you in the community? What's important to you out there on the front line? What's important to you folks sitting in the power station or whatever? What kinds of things should we be doing to help make sure that down the road you are more secure, more safe, and better equipped to accomplish what you need to do?
Well, you had mentioned earlier that you were looking ahead 10, 20, 30 years to see how these things could be implemented. Some of this stuff, though, may be a little bit more urgent, especially with some of the different cells that are springing up, like just happened recently in Australia and other places like that. We expect that we can look for more of that. So maybe some of this stuff really has to be on a fast track. What do you think? Is 30 years unreasonable? Can we get some?
It's going to take us 30 years to do this. What we're saying is that if we have that target, that end state visionary goal, and you know, you said to yourself how difficult and challenging it will be to meet some of those goals.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
What are the things that we can do to get it? Each step that we take now has got to be directed towards getting us closer to that ultimate goal.
Yeah.
And that's why we put together these visionary goals. So there are going to be components of this that are going to be coming about a lot faster. Certainly we're not looking at 20, 30 years. The 20, 30 year thing is just that. What is that North Star to guide us in the direction we want to go, so that we don't get sidetracked by other things that might not help us along the way? Now, keep in mind, just because something doesn't necessarily fall neatly into the category of these visionary goals does not mean it's not going to be a project that we take on if we see merit in it for something else.
Yeah.
So if there's an urgent need for another type of technology that might not fit into these realms, that doesn't mean we're not going to look at it.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Sensational. Fascinating. Very, very, very fascinating. And a wonderful picture that you've given us. And I know we've talked a little bit about this off the air, and I'm real glad that we finally could get together and outline some of these things on the air. We're sure looking forward to seeing Dr. Brothers at the Homeland Security Technology Conference on the 14th. He's a keynoter there in Boston at the conference. And of course, people can learn more about that at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz, on the right-hand side of the screen. And, of course, they can go to your website and learn all the things about Homeland Security. And it's going to be a very exciting thing to have you part of the conference.
You know, Colonel, by the time we get out there to the conference in April, we'll have already been working on something we call the National Conversation. And what we want to do is to instigate discussions between the user community and the innovator community and the researchers and developers, and get those people actually talking to each other so that technologies can be started earlier on the right track, as well as making sure that, you know, ideas start bubbling up. Like I said earlier, there are great ideas everywhere, and the more people that are involved in the discussions, the more people that are involved in the national conversation, is what we're calling it, the better the ultimate outcomes are going to be. And more importantly, it's being done in a collaborative way, so that helps everybody make sure that the best possible outcomes will get out of it.
Can we explore that a little more? I mean, the national conversation is a great idea, but what are we going to do? Are we going to enlist public service announcements on radio and television and other places and find ways where people can feed information to the Department of Homeland Security in an expeditious manner, or town meetings? Or what are your plans for the national conversation?
Well, there, a lot of them are still in development, but a lot of it's going to be taking place online, and also in, you know, when we count to conferences and events like this. We want people to talk not only to us, but to each other, and that's even more important. We're establishing an online platform that will enable people to get the conversation going, with the hopes that those conversations will continue in a variety of other fora.
All right, so we should promote the idea for people to attend the conference, visit with Dr. Brothers and the others that are there representing the Department of Homeland Security, and be part of the national conversation. That's one of the reasons why you want to talk to people. You want to hear from people. That's right.
Absolutely. We are not working in a closed environment. We are very wide open. We are working to address some really significant capability gaps, and we want ideas from wherever they can come from.
All right, John Verrico. Real pleasure having you on the program. Have we missed anything? Is there something we wanted to cover that we missed?
Oh, there's probably dozens of other things we could have talked about, Colonel. I know where our time is limited, but I would just encourage people visit the new science and technology website. It's SCITECH, scitech.dhs.gov. It's been designed to enable folks to be able to interact more with the directorate and find out more about what we're doing and find ways to actually touch base with some of the experts here.
All right. John Verrico, thank you so much for being with us. This has been very, very generous of your time, and I'm going to look forward to when we can have Dr. Brothers as a guest on the program. I understand you're going to set that up in the coming weeks, and we'll look forward to a follow-up.
Sounds great.
All right, John, thanks a bunch. And now to Francina Holdris for an encore word on how we can protect ourselves with our sixth sense.
Actually, the world needs a quiet day, just a daggum quiet day, just to sit down and shut up and listen and just be quiet and just think and feel what's going on in the world. And the more we do that and get back to ourselves and reconnect with ourselves, we'd be surprised what we'll discover. And that is the secret to the security problem. That is national security. When we wake up on the inside and stand up on the inside, then the world outside just straightens up automatically. But we've got to do better.
This isn't really a sixth sense necessarily. This is kind of intuition. Is that right? What did you mean by that?
Well, it's the unseen. In security, we talk about the seen and the unseen. Mm-hmm. And the sixth sense is that unseen energy that is around us. And we say that in the essence of the Boston Marathon and any public event. Mm-hmm. And we have to harness that skill. We have it innately. We are born with it. We have just been desensitized to it due to our busy lifestyles. And the terrorists that are amongst us, they figure that out, that we don't pay attention. We're not aware. Oh, that's okay. Oh, it's just a kid. Really? So we need to sit at the kitchen table, at the house, and we need to sit down and have a real conversation about safety and protection first. And then we need to encourage and develop those senses with our children. Because everybody at a kitchen table is an executive, a president. They hold some office in some workplace around the world, or an entrepreneur in some facet of life. But they all go home to some kitchen table somewhere at the end of the day. That's where it starts. That's where we develop that sixth sense.
Well, do people really sit around the kitchen table anymore? And if not, do we just go ahead and say, well, look, this is something we're going to need to do, sit around the kitchen table and develop the sixth sense. And then where do we begin? We gather everybody around the kitchen table. You're talking about at home, I presume, or are you talking about it at the kitchen table at the office? And then where do we begin?
You define that. Everybody has to define kitchen table. Kitchen table is a term that I believe we take people from that concept to the concept of a gathering, of a collective consciousness. Mm-hmm. Coming together to identify a skill set or to raise the awareness of safety and safety consciousness around us in our daily lives. And it could be the boardroom, anywhere there's a gathering of like minds for a common cause. So I say kitchen table figuratively.
All right, well, good. Well, tell me then, supposing I gathered my family or co-workers or somebody around the table, and you happen to be there at the head of the table, how would you begin?
I would be in the office. I would begin by having a real conversation with my team members about safety and threats that they have yet to voice, they have experienced in their own world of delivering a service or producing a product for me. What are some of our vulnerabilities from the front line? Talk to me. Let's hear those. And what did you sense about that? Asking the questions and probing the mentality to think. We're just not thinking. And that's where we would start, is think through those processes, whatever they are, whether it's a vault with millions of dollars in a bank, a critical protection infrastructure such as chemical food processing plants, nuclear plants, our energy plants, our government, anything of critical, or anything around people, family, loved ones, retirees, hospitals. What are those vulnerable areas? What are you experiencing, nurses and doctors on the floors? Did you sense anything? Do you sense? I think we just need to get around the table and inject the thought process into the minds of our workers, because we're so busy doing, we're just not stopping to think. Oh, that guy did come in the surgical room. We didn't know who he was, but he was dressed out. He had a tag on. Was he an infiltrator? We didn't pay attention, but we did have a problem. We lost the patient behind this. Find out. So there are certain things that we just need to have an open conversation about that has nothing to do with the Boston Marathon. It has something to do with what we're dealing with every day. That's how we start. And then from that, we codify the resources and the information, and collectively what we've determined is when people can see themselves in the mission, vision, and they become a part of the provision. So when they see themselves and they are part of the process, part of the solution and not the problem, then you begin to really get to the crux of what security, what breaches there really are on the front line, and then the problem is solved. And you put a plan of action that everybody can participate in and be accountable for. People need something to do. They need something to think about. And when it's the honor of the war is not in Iraq now, it's right here on U.S. soil. It's right here in Buncombe County, North Carolina. It's right there in Dallas, Texas. It showed up in Boston the other day. Where is it going to show up next? Well, we need to understand the ground war is here. It's our neighbors. It's all around us. We need to be aware.
Pretty fascinating stuff, Francina. And I've got to admit, after 9/11, and we found out that they trained these terrorists to be pilots and then to fly the plane, and I'm thinking, why didn't somebody think about that? I remember myself, I play chess, and when I teach my children chess, I would turn the chessboard around every once in a while. I wouldn't let them win, but I told them that anytime they were uncomfortable that we could turn the chessboard around and play the other way. Why didn't people sit down and plan for ways of hurting the United States and the ways that we are weak? And then if that would have happened, we would have seen the fact that we had great vulnerability with our airplanes, with our jetliners. And I think that's what you're trying to get at, is that we need to look at ourselves the way the enemy looks at ourselves. Is that right?
Absolutely. We need a mirror. These guys are just having a ball with us, and we need to do just that. We need to think. We need to be proactive and really think through and stop broadcasting our vulnerabilities on this media frenzy. That's where they get our secrets. We give it to them. And, you know, we need to keep our media about more of a general safety and consciousness society in general as a lifestyle. And we can do programming to that while we quietly tuck away and put the brain smarts on dealing with structure to deal with these threats that are right here. We can't think it's overseas. It's next door. It's right around the corner from our school. So we need to consciously stop, look, and listen. and refocus our focus because they're here. And you're exactly right. How are they thinking? They're very patient. But we have to look inside ourselves.
Yeah, the you mentioned the media, but really, as long as we've had a free press, there's been complaints about the media. I remember reading about General Sherman during the Civil War. He didn't like the reporters hanging around because he said they're all spies. Well, they weren't all necessarily spies, but by when they reported the things that were going on in the troop movements and things like that, he felt that that was detrimental to their particular cause, and so he really resented the press. But we do have a free press in this country, and and that's something that I don't think we're going to be able to shut down and do without. The press has been sometimes responsible and sometimes irresponsible, but I don't know if there's any way of curtailing that. You're not making a proposal that we have sort of limits on the media, are you?
Absolutely not. What we're doing is asking for a more conscious, collective consciousness around the issues of the society and presenting them in a way that is practical and that makes sense and is simple enough for a child to understand. It's based out of love and not fear. And it's just programming, and it's reprogramming, and sometimes it causes one to look at its personnel and its staff and what they're bringing to the masses. Otherwise, the population will dictate the news, and certainly we don't want it to continue to shut down our cities like Boston and monopolize our media for days and days on end. My goodness, these guys are gone. They're already in the next city. What are we doing? We're still in Boston on that same street talking about it. So as a general society, we need to just kind of, you know, be a little bit more private with our vulnerabilities and then deal with them quietly and focus, and it throws the enemy off. If we're not broadcasting it so free, we are a free society, and that's why they're here. Because we can be free to do good or free to do evil. So we maximize the good in the best that we can. One person, one community at a time. But we have to rise up within ourselves to know who's next door.
Francina Hulrus is the only woman-owned, African-American-owned nuclear security business in the United States. And at this time, I want to thank you very much for those of you who have contributed to the this program. We depend on contributions from listeners like you for the existence of this show. We're totally science community supported. So those of you who have contributed, thank you very much. Those of you who wish to can do so at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you'll see a little tab there for donations. Just click the donations, and we appreciate all your help.
And now, we make time for the voice of reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
How many nuclear weapons do we have, and do we need them all? If we don't, then we need to be dismantling and eliminating that material. Where it's used in civil commerce, for example, highly enriched uranium has been used for a long time to produce medical isotopes. That has a great benefit, but at the same time, we now realize we can have that same benefit without using the highly enriched uranium, and there's a massive effort underway internationally to convert all those processes that use highly enriched uranium to no longer use that material. That just takes something out of the equation. It takes out completely from an area where we need to. So we don't need to secure the material if we're not using it. So the longer-term discussion is, why do we use this material, and do we have other options? This is Corey Hinderstein. I'm Vice President for International Programs at the Nuclear Threat Initiative.
So you decide, has this really been the voice of reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
I am waiting for you. I